Remember what we're trying to do with kids on the spectrum is regain their brain function, reconnect their body to their brain is what we're trying to do, is rewire hardware that went sideways.
Yep.
So we are rewiring their brain through diet. It's doable.
Want to truly be the best parent you can be and help your child thrive after their autism diagnosis? This podcast is for all in parents like you who know more is possible for your child.
With each episode, we reveal a secret that empowers you to be the parent your child needs now, saving you time, energy, and money, and helping you focus on what truly matters most, your child.
I'm Cass.
And I'm Len.
Welcome to Autism Parenting Secrets.
Hello and welcome to Autism Parenting Secrets. It's Len and I'm here with Cass, and we have an extremely special guest today. And as you all know, Cass and I are on a mission to empower parents to take control of their and their child's health and wellness. And our guest shares that exact mission, only she's been at this much, much longer. We're honored to have Dr. Michelle Perro, and she is a veteran pediatrician with over four decades of experience in acute and integrative medicine. More than 15 years ago, Dr. Perro transformed her clinical practice to include GMO and pesticide advocacy, which you've heard a lot about on this podcast in prior episodes. She worked as both an emergency room director and attending physician. Dr. Perro has managed her own business, Down to Earth Pediatrics, creating a new field of integrative urgent care medicine. And Dr. Perro also co-authored the highly acclaimed book, What's Making Our Children Sick? And that's a phenomenal book. And she's also the executive director of a not-for-profit based science website, GMO Science. She's authored many publications and has a column with the journal, The Townsend Letter. She is presently working on Regenerative Health International, a not-for-profit based group focused on holistic health and promoting food as medicine, which is music to our ears. She lectures nationally and internationally on regenerative food and soil, environmental health, and justice issues focused on children. She plans to have her second book released in the summer of 2023. So with that background, we're just so honored to welcome Dr. Perro to the podcast. Welcome.
Len, thank you. Cass, my pleasure. Delighted to be here with your community.
Oh my God, we're so excited that you are here, and this conversation is going to be so rich in all that you're doing. And one thing I love to help parents do is kind of take control in the kitchen and read ingredient lists. And I had this amazing mom who sent me some of the stuff her son's eating, and it's like so much GMO, so many other things in there. And I, you know, if we can start maybe with food and parents taking back control of what their child eating, what that might also impact, you know, have positive impact on their health.
You know, that's so important, Cass. And we can just jump right in with that, because I'm not into green pharmacy, that we can fix your issue with a green pill, even though it's a supplement, even though it's an organic supplement, if the diet is not improved. And for all the kids I've worked with over my career, when parents are unable to improve their children's diets, no matter how much progress they make, they relapse. That's been my clinical experience.
Yeah. And I mean, food is such the foundation, right? And making better food choices and making nourishing. And I know so many parents have children that are picky eaters. And this is something that I love. It's because you have to create safety for your child in the food that they eat, but making sure that all of those ingredients that they're consuming set them up for success. Because like you said, you know, they might relapse, but you know, you're spending all of this probably time and money doing therapy. But if you're feeding your child, you know, food that's actually harming them, you're really going to just stay stuck.
You know, it's interesting because you're right. There are many children, especially with chronic issues, who are picky. And they're often picky because they're nutrient deficient. And we have several issues. We have the nutrient deficiency issue and creating pickiness, and then the kids won't eat anything because they're picky, and then they eat the white food diet. White rice, white bread, white turkey, if you can get the turkey in them, and of course, a French fry. And the ketchup is the food group. But then, you know, when parents interface with the medical system has been trained and taught to denigrate nutritional medicine as a valid component of healing. We're not taught it. So we don't know it. I got 2 hours of nutrition in medical school, and I hear it's not much better now because that was in the troglodyte era of, Stegosaurus and that era. So we've got this kind of fail system where here we are saying, medicine in the kitchen, and then that is not being supported by where parents seek help. So there is this disconnect, almost this schizoid disconnect of what our parents have to deal with to navigate the system.
So Michelle, in terms of parents looking at food as an opportunity on how to help their child, I'll offer up the skeptical dad's perspective, because that's where I was, where I didn't think food mattered at all. And then pretty quickly I said, well, some of it might make a difference, because it's pretty obvious that food has some role. We were living in Brownstone, Brooklyn at the time, thought we had our forever home right next to one of the best pizzerias in the country. And the idea of giving food up, giving up my favorites, or my son not eating my favorites, was so difficult. But now what I've come to understand, and I just want to get your reaction to it, it's not as if for a child, particularly on the spectrum, it's not as if food is a variable that, hey, you should look at this. It's so incredibly important. It might be the most important thing in terms of just helping to improve the overall vitality and health of any child, but particularly one on the spectrum. So I think this discussion is powerful, because the idea of addressing nutrient deficiencies and helping to get food right for a child isn't just one of many things to focus on. It could be the most important. That's what I've come to appreciate. And I know most dads don't appreciate it like that. What would you say in terms of how important is food?
Well, you made several points that I want to touch on, Len, and you covered some really, very kind of important ground. Let me unpack that a bit. Food is the cornerstone of treating anyone. And when I say treat, I don't even like the way treat. It has to become the way you do it. Whole food, plant forward, regen, organic is the only way to restore gut health, repair intestinal permeability, rebalance the microbiome, restore nutrient density, and improve detoxification. And those are the four key things that we have to do with kids on the spectrum. It's not rocket science. And the 90% of the kids I saw with autism, we'll focus on autism today, had gut issues. It could have even been 100%, but I'll say 90%, because nothing in medicine is 100. Now, having said that, so we say, yes, food is the cornerstone. If people don't change the diet, I tell people, don't see me. In the past, I say, come back in 6 months when you're ready, because you're not ready. Let's look at the dads. Let's assume a typical, a male-female relationship. We know we have mom-mom, dad-dad, mom-mom, dad-dad, whatever the permutation of the family. There is always that discerning family member. In the past, it's been the dad in my own practice who sits there in the clinic with the arms crossed when I say you have to go organic because of the cost. And moms are like, yeah, go for it. Whatever we have to do. And there are ways to mitigate costs. And we say, why? Well, why is that? Yes, organic. Let's just say organic. I prefer organic regen, but it's just too many words and syllables. Let's just say organic. It's more expensive because it's not subsidized. Monopolized agriculture by big ag is subsidized by our government. And the small organic farmers, even the big organic farmers, are not. And organic food should be conventional food. Chemical inputs in your food that have been genetically engineered to produce a quality to be pesticide resistant are not regenerative. People should not be eating that stuff. So when the dads sit there like this, there are two things I can do. And what I've learned over the many years, because I mostly saw moms, I would see a dad and pass out in the practice because it was so unusual. But what if we don't include dads in the conversation, we're lost, because it's a family dynamic. So dads have to step up and step in. I know oftentimes moms often leave work and will stay with the families in general, before I'm going to get kind of smeared by, the Gen X people. Right. All that, but I'm talking historically because, I've been at this a while, and the dads tend to earn more money. Men earn more money than women. That's statistically shown. Even though women spend 85% of the household budget, in general, men make more. But okay, that aside, we won't go into that conversation. But if we need to change the eating of the entire family. You can't have little Johnny on a kale salad and dad's going next door to the Brooklyn Pizza. Right. It doesn't work. Or hide the food in the closet like my husband did. He hid his junk food in the closet and the kids found it. So that doesn't work either. Okay, so we got to do that. Everyone's going to change their food together. And what I tell families is you be your own scientific experiment. You're N of 1, 2, 3, or 4, 5, 6, whatever many people are in your family, including the dog. Change your diet 4 weeks and see what happens. And in 4 weeks, when we have our follow-up, I usually saw kids back in a month after the first visit. If you're not better, I'll give you your money back. You get a refund because I failed. But I also ask people to give me photos of their pantry. I want to see their pantry, their fridge, their freezer, and their spice rack. What are you using? And for sure, I found canola oil, beer, inorganic spices, waffles in the freezer, you know, Eggo and or whatever. Or you have to know that 46% of Americans' income is spent eating out. So they're all organic at home, but half their meals are Taco Bell or drive-through or whatever. So there are various disconnects, and we have to re-Weberize. I just made that up. These disconnects of how we approach food. This way Americans eat of processed food doesn't work. And we have to get away from that on the soccer fields, PTA meetings, Halloween candy nonsense. It has to be gone. So we're trying to re-educate our families into these parallel tracks, parallel systems, new paradigms in health and how we approach it. And families need to expand this like-mindedness. So people say, oh, you don't give them a treat, you're being cruel. How many times have I heard that? That mindset has to be eliminated. So I think I was a little bit long-winded on that one answer, Len, but that's sort of, did I answer what you asked me?
You did, but you touched on the idea that it's the beliefs that parents may have about food. If those aren't checked initially, then all the guidance, all the books, all the practitioners, they'll never stick with it. So it's like the beliefs about food is what, for me, that's what shifted that enabled me to like not even question whether I was going to do the diet with my son and my family. Cause I could have been one of those dads who's like, you guys do whatever you want. I'm going to keep eating what I'm eating. So giving those things up was not convenient. And I did go kicking and screaming a bit, but it made all the difference for the connection of all of us, you know, in our family. And we all got healthier. So I started to see the evidence of how incredibly powerful it is. And particularly from a connection standpoint. And which is ultimately with autism, there's a lot of things you want for your child, but it was, I had to be reminded that it really was, I wanted to be connected with my son and we do that through food. So why would I continue to eat toxic food while he had kind of a, you know, less options? When we did it as a family, thanks to Cass's leadership on this, that's when everything really shifted for us.
Yeah, food is so important. And the other piece of this too, and you know, Michelle, you talk about this so brilliantly, is that you are going to run into people who will try to derail you throughout this journey. So you will get eye rolls from doctors or therapists. You will get in social situations like schools. I often talk to parents and they're like, well, what do you do for school? I'm like, well, I find out what they're serving. I make a healthy version. I bring my own. I put it in a really nice packaging. I make everyone feel included. And I bring extras because there's always some parent who forgets their child has allergies, who can't eat what other kids eat or choose not to, you know, because it's really important. And, you know, family, holiday, you know, interactions. I would bring my own food for the family, or we would offer to cook. Like we would brine an organic turkey in the back of our car in a cooler and drive it up to like my in-laws' house and bring all the organic vegetables. And we would prepare the meal for everyone, knowing one, it was safe for my son and my daughter, but it was also going to nourish every single person at that table. So it's like being willing to, you know what? Yeah, it's not about convenience. This is about nourishment. This is setting a health foundation. This is truly about setting everyone up for success. And when you have a child on the spectrum, guess what? They need this foundation. It's so important to really help set them up for success as they move forward.
Well, you bring up so many good points there, Cass. And one thing I'd highlight is there's a cost of convenience. And so when people say, well, we ate it, we're fine. Well, our kids are sicker than we are. And, you know, when I wrote the book, you know, 53% of American children had a chronic disease. It's higher now. And there's so many chronic diseases that are common that people think that those diseases are normal, that all kids have them. And that's just not true. Like allergies being probably the top one that comes to mind. Also, I had a call out from a mom recently, and I took care of her kid years ago, and she did great on homeopathy, and we can get into that. But the mom now has some chronic health challenges and said, I said, you need to do all these certain food changes and whatever. She goes, how am I going to do that? I'm visiting my son in college. I said, well, you get an Airbnb, and if there's any kind of organic food place near you, you know, we call that whole paycheck, but there are others. I said, you have to make the meals at home. Can you not do that? And she did, and she didn't relapse. And so it takes more work. Be clear. You know, what we're trying to do is definitely more work, because convenience, easier doing the drive-through, takes its toll on your health. That's one thing. But the other thing you mentioned that I want to touch upon is the way we look at the gut no longer is just about the gut. It's the gut-brain microbiome axis. And we don't even say anymore gut-brain. It's gut-brain microbiome, this triad of how these three systems, and there are other systems, the whole body is biologically connected as a system, are all chatting up. And if we're not nourishing and loving the bugs, the gut, the brain, there's going to be dysregulation. And our kids cannot handle it. And a lot of it is because our world is so much more toxic. And a lot of it is from pesticides. There are other, it's not the only thing. It's probably the worst thing. Some people might say air pollution. Some people might say water. Sure. You know, if you're living, you know, next to First Avenue, New York City, probably not a good thing in terms of your kid's health. However, your child, your baby might be eating 6 to 8 times a day, your toddler 6 times, your teen, maybe 13 times a day. So they're eating all the time. So food for me, and this is what I've been studying for a few decades, is the key to regaining kids' health. So we're back to the food is medicine.
Yeah, it really is the linchpin, isn't it? Like everything else hinges on getting that right, whatever that means for that particular child. So like it's so individualistic, you know, whether the child has allergies or intolerances. So you can't kind of make blanket statements, eat X, Y, and Z, but there's clearly some aspects or things that are in our food that should be avoided for everyone. Like they're contrary to health and wellness. And it is, it's inconvenient. And we found that it seems like of all the things that parents might be afraid of, inconvenience is like the top, almost the top of the list, which is weird when you think about it, but people, the idea of having to expend extra effort or money in terms of investing, paying more for organic in this case, that's such a hard thing for some parents to kind of get behind. But if they can get behind it, so much more opens up.
Well, what's so hard to wrap around is the fact that Big Ag, in conjunction with our government, has poisoned our food. And the key ingredient is glyphosate, which is the main ingredient in Roundup. I think everyone's heard of Roundup, produced by Monsanto, now Bayer. And the reason why this is so important for your community is that papers have come out, one in 2019 and one recently over the summer, that showed how glyphosate causes autism. I'm not talking about correlations. I'm talking about causation with the mechanism of how it does it laid out. Now, that paper that came out in the summer of 2019 alone should have been raising every alarm. And if we were truly concerned about the pandemic, the global pandemic of autism, it's in every country and sure, rising. Some countries it actually leveled off. Most countries it continues to rise, the rates of autism. Then we should have pulled out the trigger, which was the glyphosate. It's not the only thing, because autism is a multifactorial causation, but it's a key part of autism. And so we said nothing. So therefore, the government is okay knowing that glyphosate causes autism. And we're okay with the rates now being 1 in 30 children on the spectrum. It, from when I was a resident, it might have been 1 in 10,000 kids on the spectrum. So within my lifetime, it's gone from 1 in 10,000. I don't want to even do the math, to 1 in 30. And I think if you want to really understand autism, you should spend a night with a child on the spectrum and see how tough it can be. It can be a form of birth control for teenagers because many of the kids on the spectrum don't sleep. They have dyssomnias. So many of them are up at night bouncing around and they're not eating and they're very energetic. Not all. This is an individualized issue. That's why it's called spectrum. Yep. From very mild to very severe. But I'm just saying in general, it can be challenging. You know, I had when I was writing the book with my co-author, Dr. Adams, we interviewed 20 of my patients. And at first, she didn't believe any of this. She was a non-believer. She came around. She interviewed at least 20 of my patients. She spent 1 hour in my office with two autistic boy twins. 1 hour later, she came out of there pale in a sweat. And I said, oh, how was that? That was an hour. Imagine raising those two boys.
Yep.
And she goes, got it. And months later, we were able to get these children with autism reversed, which is another issue because in Western medicine doesn't teach that autism is reversible, which is a whole nother conversation, guys. But so just to give you an idea, I throw a couple of vignettes in there on how this looks like clinically. Here within it lies the scenario. I kind of went off on a tangent, but we'll wrap it up and bring it back.
It worked really well. And what I just wanted to add to that too is, you know, having had a son who had so much stomach issues, right? Gut issues with head banging, posturing, pooping 10 times a day. And when I went to take him to experts, we were told by so many, well, that's to be expected. It's part of autism. And that's where we called bullshit. Like, let's get him to feel good in his body. And then maybe that will impact the behavior. So we didn't, you know, that those doctors that we saw, we kept seeking to find the doctors that were truly going to help us find those answers. Because let me tell you, when we got my son's stomach and feeling good in his body, everything else changed. He connected with us. He communicated with us. You know, the other day we had a conversation. He's a freshman in high school. And he's like, hey, mom, you know, am I going to go to college? I'm like, do you want to go to college? And he's like, I think so. I'm like, okay. He's like, well, how am I going to do the food piece of it? You know, because everything's homemade, cooked. And I was like, well, you know, we'll have to probably get, you know, an apartment for you. And he's like, oh, okay. Like, because he knows that he can't just go into any place and eat the food. And the food is such a foundational piece that helps him feel good in his body.
But more importantly, you've invited him into the kitchen where he's helping them.
I did. Now he wants to learn how to cook, which is amazing. And this was the boy, you know, moderate to severe autism, may never speak, you know, very limited thing. But it's like, no, following the clues of what was going on in his body and supporting him along the way and not listening to what the experts, right, how they were trained, but listening to what my son needed, kept us moving forward to support him as he needed to be supported. And you briefly said, you know, mentioned homeopathy, and like, homeopathy changed so much for him, especially from a gut perspective. It was huge for us. So I think it's parents being open. Yes. Foundation, food, getting rid of toxins, getting rid of things like glyphosate, even something that's labeled non-GMO doesn't mean it wasn't sprayed with a chemical, you know, so it's really understanding this landscape and making better decisions to support these individuals who absolutely can't just rely on convenience.
So these are so many excellent points and tips for parents, because often, you know, you're not going to find someone like me because the system, the traditional Western medical system, conventional medicine, whatever you want to call it, will not give the tools that parents need to get their children better. It's not how we're trained. It's not our training. So you need to find more natural, holistic, integrative types of practitioners, or go to so many autistic organizations like there are now, like Epidemic Answers and Autism One, and there's TACA, and there's so many now where parents get good information, but they have to learn that we have literally indeed created a parallel system. Well, the key thing about being a pediatrician and what I've learned over my lifetime is to listen to parents. I see your kid in the practice for a visit and you're going to think, I know your child better than you. So how arrogant is that? So what you tell me has to be interpreted and how then I can help guide you to make the correct choices. Now, what happens when parents can't find people like me? They will have to do a lot of their own legwork to be empowered to get back their kids on track. And they can through what you guys are doing with coaching, because parents now have to be trained. I'm trying to do it, train parents. The next book I'm working on is teaching parents homeopathy at home. That's just what I'm teaching. So you don't need people like me to tell you how to raise your child. It's only when things go really off the rails. So the first place we start is when we train, retraining parents on how to do what you guys did through trial by fire. What I've learned stumbling along the way up with my own family and my own career is there was no roadmap. But now, after many years collaboratively, we figured it out because we had to for our own patients, our own families. And here we are. So the main thing to recognize is that because our food is chronically poisoned and it's not real food, it's a food-like ingredient that's genetically modified, which will affect your microbiome because the bugs in your gut will swap with these GMOs and you yourself will become a modified organism, by the way, because we are mostly microbial 10 to 1. To understand that you have to stay away from these food-like ingredients, which are GMOs and their associated pesticides. If it says non-GMO, it still will contain pesticides. The average food has 6 pesticides. So you have to understand that these pesticides are neurotoxins, they are endocrine disruptors, they affect children's immune systems, and they are nutritionally devoid of any quality. Yep. And we can go into how we know that. But so this is what we're dealing with.
So for a parent who's listening and thinking about, okay, what can I do to minimize GMOs? And one thing that you'll often hear on this journey, especially with autism, is, you know, going gluten-free or going gluten and dairy-free or casein-free. I think part of the getting rid of gluten is nice is because you're actually getting rid of a huge source of glyphosate. For most glyphosate in the U.S. or most wheat in the U.S. is sprayed with glyphosate as part of, you know, as a desiccant, kind of that harvesting to make the harvesting easier, which is probably why gluten-free is so beneficial for so many people. But thinking about crops beyond wheat, what other crops would be ones to kind of, hey, if I'm looking at this ingredient list, you know, corn's here, and odds are corn is probably GMO, at least here in the United States, right?
Mm-hmm. So what you're absolutely right. So we spray crops that are genetically modified so that the weeds around them die. And so because 75% of the weeds in the U.S. are now resistant to glyphosate-based herbicides, we've had to create more serious genetically modified plants and more toxic pesticides like 2,4-D, dicamba, and others, which are actually worse. And there are even some pesticides that are actually worse than Roundup, if that's possible, because Roundup is a carcinogen. Be clear, it causes cancer. So let's just be clear about that. So you are correct, Cass, that we use glyphosate on crops as a desiccant, and that's mostly wheat, oats, and legumes, which are the predominant foods that kids like and vegetarians. And they are really high in glyphosate, super high. And we know that 0.1 parts per billion, which is super small in a rat study, caused non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is now affecting 1 in 3 Americans and about 13% of children. 1 in 3 children who are obese probably also have fatty liver. This is a problem, and it's undiagnosed because it's silent. It's quiet while it's progressing. So this is another reason why families have to eat organic. If you eat organic, you are not eating a GMO or pesticide. Now, there is some cross-contamination, wind, water, birds. You have one field next that's organic, next to a conventional field. It's not like the plants read the line between the neighbor's property. Stuff is blowing. And according to a captured organization called the USDA, 5 to 9% of crops are contaminated that are organic. However, it's so much less and so much better for your child that it's still the way to go. when you eliminate gluten, those are a lot of the processed foods that kids love because they're all highly addictive. They have to stay out of the middle aisles of the supermarket and shop the whole food perimeter, farmers markets, wherever you need to go. And sometimes you need 4 supermarkets. I remember hitting the local farmers market, Trader Joe's, Costco, Sprouts. I was all over the place trying to find the right ingredients. And I'd say, why, if you have families with autistic kids in your community, why does every family have to cook individually? Then I used to have these families in a community near here say, 3 kids within 10 blocks all have the same diagnosis and issues. Can you not share trays of food? And they did. These 3 families, it was mostly the moms, who swapped trays of food, all gluten-free, dairy-free, and I can talk about that, and organic. So it's doable. You can do it on a budget. There's a preschool out here that years ago, they said, we can't do this. It's too expensive. I did it with them and we came under budget, getting away from goldfish and all the stuff that kids like to eat, all the non-food like products. So it can be done. It can be done on a budget. I did that same talk for a bunch of moms up in called Cornerstone up in South Dakota. They did it too and transformed their community. So community by community, we can do this, make these changes. But gluten and dairy, they're big molecules. They're big proteins, rather. And so when people, like our children, have intestinal permeability, also leaky gut, these big undigested proteins leak across these one cell membranes. And then your immune system on the other side sees these large proteins as foreign invaders and mount an immune response. If you're constantly doing that, the immune response never goes down, and that's called chronic inflammation. Those products from all the immune response, as well as the bacteria and the other microbes getting across, cause intense release of these chemicals called cytokines and other chemicals. They're called lipopolysaccharides and a whole bunch of other stuff. They go up the vagus nerve, cross the blood-brain barrier, inflame the brain. And when those brain cells act up, microglial cells, they're really hard to quiet back down. So we've got this inflammatory pathway. So what can parents do simply in the kitchen? Organic, get rid of all the other stuff. And the products are corn, soy, canola. Forget canola. Don't even use it. Don't buy it. Don't look at it. Those products, corn and soy, are 95% genetically modified. Cottonseed oil, cotton. Tampons, GMO. And then there are a whole bunch of other foods now that are GMO. Papaya from Hawaii, some squash, some zucchini, innate potatoes, Simplot from Idaho, Arctic apples, alfalfa, yeah. And a lot of products and medicines that use genetically modified organisms like E. coli and yeast also have GMOs, as well as vaccines. So there's a lot of GMO, genetic modified organisms, genetic engineering, bioengineered. They're all synonymous. They just mean that the genomes have been altered to create a desired trait. This is not Mendelian sexual hybridization, with the pea plants. This is genetic manipulation, either through a gene gun or something called CRISPR-Cas9 technology. So people have to appreciate that. We're eating them. We're putting them in girls' vaginas with non-organic tampons, and we're injecting them because certain vaccines are GMO. They're genetically modified vaccines like the Hep B, for example, and the J&J vaccine. They're modified. I haven't seen any studies looking at the effects on children. Now, when you have a challenged child, like our dear kids on the spectrum, they're challenged, they're sensitive, and now we're doing these experimental foods and therapies on them. We can practice something called precautionary principle. Even if we do not have all the data, our children are not little lab rats. Well, some of them are a little rodential, a little ratty. No, kids are not ratty. Some of the parents are a little ratty. But if we just do these things to help our children and say, listen, we don't have all the data, we're going to hold this until we have more information. This is how we protect our children. So when parents say, do you have the data? I say, I don't have all the data. I could tell you what I've seen anecdotally, the 10,000 anecdotes I've just seen in my practice. Maybe that'll help you because I have experience, right? Clinical experience. And so we can hold various things until we get our kids better. But parents should have hope. They can do this at home. This is doable. Yeah, I know. Sorry for that speech.
It's a wonderful speech, and it's all true. And you know, it's just that parents hit friction, and it gets hard, it gets challenging, it gets overwhelming. But when you talk about paying more, let's say for organic as an example, I think what I've learned is that I think a lot of parents out there just focus on the short term, like, oh wait, I got to go to 4 supermarkets, I have to pay how much extra. What people lose sight over is the long term, because the long term cost of not getting food right will dwarf anything that comes out of pocket in terms of what you're paying now. And the benefits for the child, because getting food right is a way to truly address what's at the root behind those behaviors that your co-author, you know, walked out of the room like, you know, with her hand on her head because of the behaviors. You describe beautifully why food, how that can ultimately result in behaviors that most people associate with autism. So if only a parent can step out of their day-to-day and take a longer term view, they'd see that the investment, extra investment now, is a small price to pay for, you know, to avoid the long-term costs as well as to reap the long-term benefits of their child making real progress.
Absolutely. And what I've also told families is, because I'm pretty straight up, you know, I'm also a New Yorker, and saying I'm way more expensive than that food, number one. Number two, is when you're both of your kids are homesick, and it's always sequential, by the way, when they're sick. If you've got 3 kids, they don't all get sick at once. So you're going to miss 3 weeks of work. And in my world, no work, no pay. I don't know about you guys, but if you don't work, you don't get paid. So you could take 3 weeks out of your paycheck. And lastly, I'll never forget this one mom who came in when I was in the practice last year. She told me the food was too expensive. She told me the prices of organic, but her nails were done by a professional manicure and she had a Starbucks in her hand. So hold up. Excuse me, mom. This is a call out to the ladies. Don't tell me you have enough money for a manicure in that Starbucks. That Starbucks I know is like $5. You could have put that money toward organic. And if you go to Trader Joe's, I have no stock in Trader Joe's, the cost of organic and conventional are getting closer.
It's so much closer. And this is what, like, one thing I love helping parents with is, let's take your top 10 items, price comparison, find, you know, and you can now do everything online. Take 4 stores, let's price out whatever those top things you buy and just do a comparison. And then guess what? You have your grid and you know that you're going to buy your grass-fed meat here. You're going to buy, like, and you can kind of map it out. So it doesn't, you know, instead you buy organic frozen. Like, there are options for parents to make better choices to truly help set their child up for success.
You know, one of the best things I tell folks to do, and they say, well, how can I offset glyphosate? We've been eating this stuff now, these, you know, Taco Bell and whatever. Our kids are filled with glyphosate. Yeah, true that. So what can we do? So I'm the big fan of the bone broth. Assuming someone's not vegetarian, you could do vegetarian broth, or you can do fish bone broth also, but I prefer bone broth. If you go to an organic place where you can get free range, grass-fed, organically fed animal meat treated humanely, the bones, you could ask them to save the bones for you. Don't even get the meat. Just get the bone, because the bone is rich in collagen, and collagen has glycine. And people like Dr. Seneff, who I hear may be coming to visit you guys, and myself, we believe that that glycine and glyphosate, which is N-phosphonyl methyl glycine, are swapping. And glycine, extra glycine, will help their collagen in the musculoskeletal system, as well as calm the brain. I have one of those books behind me, and that there's a toxicologist who wrote a whole section using glycine to calm kids' brains when they're on fire. So that is just making a bone broth soup. You bought the bone. You can do tons of veggies. I bought a 5-pound bag of carrots for organically from our local supermarket for $4.99 for 5 pounds. So hold on, folks. That's a lot of carrots. And you can put your veggies in there, and soup is great because soup can be stretched. It feeds a family for days. I'm the queen of the crock pot. And so this is how I did it for years, is crock pot set up before I went to work, came home, somebody made dinner. And you can, and kids like soup, and you can hide a lot of stuff in soup. You can put a lot of good stuff. So that is one of my key things I do to help kids get better when I look to restore nutrients. The other big thing I do is I do sulfur-rich foods. And so you can make a lot of tacos with onions and garlic. because we know that glyphosate impairs sulfate transport, and kids need extra sulfur to help them detox and clear all these pesticides. So extra onion and garlic, beautiful. I mean, what a beautiful, and onions for the most part organic. I just bought them $1.29 a pound organic, the yellow onions. So hold on, folks. And or you go to the farmer's market at the end of the day and you buy the imperfects. And the farmers are just want to get rid of stuff. They don't want to bring it back to their farm. And you get big bags of stuff at a low cost, but someone's got to cook. Mm-hmm. But what I say to families is, when my kids were little, I didn't want to dirty my kitchen. I don't know what I was thinking, not getting my kids in there cooking. I would change that like in a minute. So yes, boys like knives. Get them a knife and let them chop. I've never had a kid lose a finger chopping vegetables. You show them how to chop. So everyone's cooking the family. Notice I didn't say mom. And then of course, fermenting, ferment. And my own daughter like kind of like broiled me when I asked her to show me how to ferment because she's a farmer. She said, mom, YouTube it. So I YouTube fermenting and I thought, oh my God, this is so easy. And if you can get those fermented foods in your kid, and there are some microbes in apple cider vinegar, acetobacter, that will break down glyphosate. So when your kid does go to that school event, does eat at grandma's, does get glyphosate, it's ubiquitous. It's in our water. It's everywhere. Yep. You will give them the tools without spending any money on supplements. And you're hearing me say supplement. I said bone broth. I talked about sulfur-rich foods and apple cider vinegar and ferments. And right there, those are three affordable and easy things families can do. I do the rule of threes. Yep. Len, I don't give families more than three things because then like the brain explodes and you can't do it. So nice. People can look at those three things. And if they can just make their bone broth, they can just ferment. That's all I said, and put some onions. And the beautiful thing about onions is your microbes like inulin. Inulin is an onion. You feed your microbiome. Your microbiome is your first line of defense in detoxification and immune function. And it modulates this conversation with the brain. Remember, what we're trying to do with kids on the spectrum is regain their brain function, reconnect their body to their brain is what we're trying to do. Is rewire hardware that went sideways. Yep. So we are rewiring their brain through diet. It's doable.
I love everything that you just said. And we talked a little bit before we started recording about, and we'd love to have you on again to talk about the topic of how a dad can be more involved, because I love talking about that topic. But Cass has always taken the lead with food, and she's been, I don't even know how many hours in the kitchen you've spent, Cass, but I found that the broth was one way I could get actively involved. So now I'm like a warlock with my giant cauldron that I do every 2 weeks. And we use it. We use the broth throughout the week in all kinds of foods. And it's a way for me to contribute because I don't have the cooking skills that Cass does. But it's been my way of contributing. And broth has been so super
broth, and you can put bone broth in everything. So we call it what he makes, liquid gold. You know, we buy our parts, a lot of it from the farmer's market. Len has his, you know, chicken neck and
the feet, chicken feet. You know? Chicken feet is the key. That is the key ingredient.
Well, so, and they're affordable too. If you get the feet stuff and they're filled with collagen. Yeah. And I feel better about that because you don't waste the animal.
Right.
We're just not eating the chicken breasts, you know. So you eat the whole animal, and organs are super healthy. I have a hard time with organs, but if kids can eat them, you know, you can do a lot with the organs. Are also healthy as long as from an organic animal.
Right.
So these foods are really healthy for kids. So yes, thank you for being the master bone brother. Good for you. And they have a place here in not far from me that sells this beautiful bone broth, and it's like $32 a quart.
Yeah.
And I thought, are you kidding? I can make it probably about 3 quarts for about $6.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be costly.
It doesn't have to be costly. And the reason why I talk about, you know, how much things cost, because this is what people need to know. Families run budgets.
Yep.
And you have three kids, you know, there's a lot of mouths.
Well, and until you actually, a lot of times our defaults, right, become, no, I can't, you know, too expensive versus actually even trying. And so this is where giving parents the opportunity to kind of reframe what they think it might cost and really dive into this, because also that benefit of what's going to really set your child up and yourself up for success. Absolutely. Right? Without making the excuses first, right? So this is where being open, being curious, thinking about, okay, how can I do this affordably? Because there are ways to get there.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. So I think what we're trying to do is give parents usable tools that they can duplicate on their own without guidance from you guys and me, and they need to do it on their own. But I want to remind your listeners that this is a journey. There is a few folks who go in there and they toss out their pantry and tomorrow they start fresh. There are those people. And then there's the other folks, like the other rest of us humans, where it's a journey and you trip up a lot and you're using something going, oh my God, this is horrible. And you realize it later. So we're not striving for perfection here. We're striving every day to do a little better. And we have to unravel years of enculturation, biases, cultural biases, sexual biases, all the biases that we've been drenched with by media, by our families, particularly the internet and what our kids are subjected to, schools. We have to undo a lot of it, and we are going against the grain. We will be the mainstream, but for now, we're still in the eye roll community. For many of us, particularly when you say these words or homeopathy, God forbid, you know, I say that word homeopathy. I've had so many eye rolls that I think I could travel around the earth several times in my life. But we are, as we become the conventional, which we will, and the reason why we will is this is the unfortunate part. If we don't change this conversation, I'd say within the next few years, 75% of children will have a chronic disease. Chronic is the new normal. So parents will wake up when it's their own and they say like, oh my God, and raising that kid. And that's unfortunate, but often when something is home and then it's you and yours, then people will often wake up. And I find that unfortunate, but that so many of us are on this journey because of our own children and what's happened to our own, including me. I learned about homeopathy from my own son who had some health challenges 29 years ago. That's how I got on the journey. I didn't say, oh yeah, homeopathy, sure. Yeah. It was a bit of desire to know and a little bit of serendipity.
Agreed. That was the same for us too. And it's changed our world. Yeah. So I love that you found that 29 years ago. And I love that your new book that will be out this summer is really empowering parents with some of those tools, right? To understand it and to use it. I just can speak for ourselves that for the last 10 years, that's we can manage whatever we need to with homeopathy, which is amazing.
Beautiful. So I was just, as to share a little vignette with you, I was just in Amish country and I was approached by an Amish farmer. I was talking at a conference last year called Acres. It's the oldest regenerative agriculture conference in the US. And a farmer came up to me and said, hey, our Amish kids are sick. Can you come talk to us in Pennsylvania? And I said, Amish kids, what? You guys are all organic, farming, no wire, you know, no internet, wireless communities, no pollution, no car. And well, it turns out they use a lot of chemical farming. They eat GMOs. They go to Walmart. They buy white bread and white flours and sugar and are eating Doritos and drinking Coca-Cola. I was shocked. Went there, just came back. Did a talk for them on what's making Amish kids sick. I researched Amish kids. I haven't cared for any Amish before this. Their kids definitely have some issues, but they are where our kids were 25 years ago, just starting with the GMOs and the pesticides. And I gave them a talk called Homeopathy at Home, teaching the Amish about homeopathy, because they are a self-sufficient community that rely on a lot of integrative medical tools. And so teaching community by community, autistic families, the Amish, the homeschooled, how we do this is how we reach our families, going person to person, community to community, with the outreach, the parent network. And so that is my own goal, even with the book, is to go right to parents. You don't need me. You can begin at home. That's it. It's simple. That's it. There's nothing more to it. It's not magic.
Fantastic. Well, hey, I'm mindful of our time and I appreciate you taking the time to have this conversation. We so would be honored if you'd come back because there's a lot of topics we haven't even scratched the surface on. And we'll include in the show notes where people can, you know, reach out to you and find out more about the different ways that you're supporting families. And I love that you're continuing to do that in new capacities and maybe with new areas that you're focusing on. But thank you so much for the light that you're casting out in the world. And we know our families would benefit from your guidance. So thank you so much.
Len, thank you. Cass, thank you. What I tell my folks, stronger together.
Want to discover your top autism parenting blind spot? Take our free quiz today. Go to allinparent.com/go.